So you still have all the pieces that animal-based cells give you in terms of nutrition and fats and flavor, but you are eliminating the need for the animal in the process.
Green Hero. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Green Hero podcast. This is Ricard, founder of Green Hero, your go-to source for making plant-based eating easy and enjoyable. Each week, we'll be digging into the inspiring journeys of people who live a plant-based lifestyle to tease out the most effective and fun ways to add more plants into your life.
Green Hero. Green Hero. Green Hero.
Today's guest is Kara Leong, Chief of Staff of cell-based company Turtle Tree. I'm really excited about this episode as we'll talk about something as complex as cell-based food. It's not plant-based, and it's not really an animal. I mean, what is it really? Lab-grown food will certainly be part of our future, but how can we get comfortable eating it? With her extensive scientific background, Kara will try to make these complex topics simple. Kara, welcome, and thank you for joining us on our podcast. I'm so excited to have you on our show. How's it going, and where are you calling in from?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I am calling in from Sacramento, California, and yeah, that's where I come from.
All right. You and I met briefly about a month ago at the Reducetarian Summit in San Francisco, where we both were speakers. That's where I first learned about Turtle Tree, the company that you work for, and the work that you are doing. And I'm sure the majority of our listeners are so interested in hearing more about cell-based food. I mean, maybe to start, like, what is it? Is it plant-based? Is it considered part of the animal kingdom? I think for most of us, it's just food grown in a lab. But that is as far as most of us understand. So I think we should start with a high-level, very simple explanation and work ourselves kind of deeper into this topic. So maybe as you explain, think of me as a small child or a golden retriever.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, cell-based food or cellular agriculture is another way of producing food instead of the traditional methods of raising crops in the ground or growing livestock. Cell-based food in particular is taking cells from an animal, whether that's a fish or a chicken or, you know, a pig or a cow, taking those samples, immortalizing those cells, those cell samples, growing them up in large quantities without the animal in what we call bioreactors or fermenters, much like wine or beer or even pharmaceuticals use large, vast stainless steel containers that are heat and temperature controlled to grow large amounts of cells, and then harvesting those cells and, you know, putting them together in such a way to make hamburger or to make sausage or pork or, you know, bacon. You know, the ultimate goal is to create a structured product like a steak or a chicken wing or something of that nature. So it's still cells from an animal, but it's been grown without the animal in place. So you still have all the pieces that animal-based cells give you in terms of nutrition and fats and flavor, but you are eliminating the need for the animal in the process. So, that's kind of like a good short-term way of describing it.
Yeah. I have a few questions onto that. You say like, well, we take some of the cells from an animal. Like, how does that process even work? Like, what is the cell? Do they take like a little blood sample from an animal or like, how do they extract like those cells from an animal?
It's done in a lot of different ways. Some of them are not quite as humane as others, but generally speaking, you take a very, very small sample from a living animal. And a lot of these cell-based companies are, from a business model, are taking samples from animals that are now going to, you know, live their happy lives, to be honest with you. They take a very, very small sample, because you don't need a lot from these animals, then, you know, the animal goes ouch and then runs off and has a happy life. And it's very key to have a happy life because you're monitoring that animal in the future to make sure that the cells that you took from that particular animal, it's a healthy animal, that it didn't have any diseases, it didn't have any genetic malfunctions, that it didn't have something that you find out a year or two down the line is not so healthy about that animal. So it's very, very key to keep that animal healthy and monitored and, you know, coming from, you know, well understood background, things of that nature. And then those cells that you have taken, you are working to immortalize them because the whole hope and one of the biggest problems is getting those cells to replicate and multiply and go through multiple multiplications. So cells get a little more confused as they go through multiple multiplications. And so your hope is to choose or establish cell lines that don't get confused so that are immortalized and can continue to be very consistent over a long period of time because you're hoping to take that very, very small sample and grow it up to be, you know, hundreds of thousands of kilograms of meat product that can feed people.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I wanted to ask like a little bit more there. So you extract a sample from an animal and then you can kind of multiply those cells, as you're saying. How much is it if we talk in, I don't know, pounds or grams or whatever, micrograms maybe, that you kind of extract from an animal? And then like, how much are you, I don't know, is it weight? You would say like from a microgram of like a cell, can you create, as you say, like hundreds and thousands of pounds of meat? Or is it like this happy animal, as you're saying, you bring them in and you kind of extract a little bit more cells here and there from them. So it's also kind of a part of their life, just kind of extracting this, or if it's more of like one-time
thing. Every company is different. Cell lines, which is, to be honest, cell lines are kind of like the, so at heart, my background, I'm a plant biologist. I've been in agriculture all my life. And so I'm a gentleman farmer at heart. And just like people who love plants and fruits and things like that, we tend to collect varieties of things. It's kind of become collectors of different varieties. It's the same thing with cell lines. Everybody wants, I want a chicken cell line and I want a turkey cell line and I want a quail cell line and I want a, you know, a heritage Angus deer cell line, I want Wagyu, all of these things. And so, and a lot of cell lines, the way they're established, the way they're grown, the way they use media, they have different characteristics to them as well. So they can do different things. Some are better at growing muscle cells. Some are better growing fat cells. Some are easier to work with. Some are harder. So there are many different cell lines. You know, there's chicken cell lines and quail cell lines, turkey, porcine, different, you know, types of pork. And they're being established all over the world. I mean, these are not, cell lines are something that can take up to a decade to establish, not only to establish the lines, which actually doesn't take that long, but to characterize them, to understand how they work and what they do and what they're capable of. And these are not new things. These are things that have been developed for medical science for a very long time. So a lot of this is not new. It's just the first time we're using it for food.
Yeah. How has it been used for in medical earlier before you say before it was food?
Well, typically speaking, a lot of places that are trying to develop media, for example, and specifically media that is free of fetal bovine serum, you know, using plant growth factors or yeast extracts or different things like that to grow the cells in the same way, they're using a very well-studied animal cell line that's been long established, hasn't been anywhere near an animal in decades. And those are typically Chinese CHO cells, Chinese hamster ovary cells, I think are what they're called. They're very well established cell lines. They're well understood. They're kind of like the fruit fly example, right? So that you know it really well. And so you use something that you know really well, and then you change different things to see how they react and if they react the same or if they react different in ways that you want them to or ways that are new that you might want to study further. So, and those lines are, I mean, we could really deep dive into the science. But, you know, I mean, a lot of You think of it, if you're trying to, from a pharmaceutical standpoint, if you're trying to produce something, you know, that helps humans, a lot of times bacteria is a very simple organism and can't produce whatever protein or enzyme or pharmaceutical product that you're trying to achieve. It's just too simple an organism. And then yeast is, you know, a step up from that. And then mammalian cells, like CHO cells, that you can grow in large vats and, you know, aren't anywhere near an animal, but they're just a mammalian cell, can grow much more complex proteins and enzymes and peptides and things of that nature. So those are very, very well established. Those aren't new to the space. Using it for food is new.
Okay. And how long has, I think I've seen like maybe like the last 10 years, I think I've been hearing about cell-based meat. Could that be like the first talks, or is it even like maybe not even that far back? Is it 5 years when people started? I remember like a German company, I think the first I kind of heard
about. I think it was MOSA. That was 20 years ago, it's been around for a while. And historically, it was one of our presidents who probably 50, 60, maybe this is my history, 70 years ago talked about someday eating meat that did not come from animals. So, I mean, it's been a conversation for a really long time, but the ability to do a commodity product at cost, I mean, that's what it comes down to, is the research and the technology and the cost hasn't been there. And we're finally to the point where the research and the technology are good enough that we can drive down the cost to make it possible. Plus there has to be also public acceptance. I think one of the things that, you know, I've been watching these startups for, you know, 3.5, almost 4 years now, you know, explode on the scene, because, you know, 80% of these cell-based companies are in the state of California, just next door in the Bay Area. And most of them have been started by scientists and a lot of academic researchers, because it's fascinating and they see ways to commercialize. But I think we often forget you're still making a food product, and it still needs to be delicious, and it still needs to appeal to people. So yeah, that's a whole nother set of topics into itself.
Yeah. So if we continue a little bit more on like the scientific track, so you explain kind of how what you are kind of growing, right? But what are you growing these cells in? You said in the beginning, like these big containers, very similar to like wine or beer. So kind of to grow something, like where does all the cells live and do they kind of grow in there? Does it just all of a sudden become like a piece of steak in there?
Oh, goodness. That's a whole nother ball of wax. Right now, I mean, you know, the gold, I don't know if it's really the gold standard per se, but the ultimate goal is to create a structured product. But pretty much everybody will start with an unstructured product. And most likely, and I think, yeah, I mean, Just is essentially a hybrid product. And I think that is probably where everything will start, because of scalability and cost parity, will be hybrid plant-based, cell-based products will be the start, simply because the cost of producing, you know, mammalian or avian or aquatic cells in culture is still quite expensive. You know, it's new, so the equipment is still being created. It's not like something that you can get off the shelf. You know, the market drivers are still there. The media costs still need to be driven down. You know, growth factors are still pharmaceutical grade growth factors that are incredibly expensive, not necessarily FDA approved for food. So there's a lot of different things that still need to be done. But most likely we'll start with a hybrid product. So something that's a mixture of plant and animal based, which I believe is what Just is doing with their chicken product in Singapore, is a mixture. And then it will move to a undifferentiated product. And when I say undifferentiated, I mean something that doesn't have a bone, or, you know, like hamburger or ground beef, sausage, you know, something that doesn't have thickness to it. So something flat like bacon, meatballs, you know, things that don't have a recognizable bone structure to them. That's where I think we'll be next. But the ultimate goal is to, you know, have a Wagyu steak, you know, with porterhouse kind of a thing with a bone structure and, you know, differentiated fat and muscle. But that is a whole nother level of complexity.
Yeah.
When you think about it, right?
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like science fiction, right? I like in my head, it pops out like some scene from like the Fifth Element when they're like creating like a person almost, you know?
Right. Exactly. It is. But the funny thing is have you seen 3D printing recently? I was in grad school not that long ago, and I remember them bringing a whole plant vascular structure model to class. Mm-hmm. With all the pores and the structure and everything in this 3D plastic model that had been blown up so that you could actually physically hold it in your hand and the complexity to it. And that was probably 4 years ago. And 3D modeling now uses microfluidics, droplets, so you can talk about muscle and fat and all sorts of things being combined in unusual ways. The size has been, decreased. I mean, it's amazing what they're doing with technology. Not my area of expertise. I can't really speak to it much more than that. But the leaps and bounds when people are motivated.
Oh, yeah. No, that's for sure. It's almost like when in the U.S. they decided to put the man on the moon, right?
Yes.
Like people are like, this is where we're going. This is our timeline
now. We're doing this.
So when you were talking about these, did you call them mixed products? That was plants?
Hybrid products.
Mm-hmm. Could you expand a little bit more on that, what that means? Like what kind of product would that be? Like the end product, I mean.
When I say hybrid products, mycelial cultures, fungal cultures are becoming really popular. I mean, corn's been on the market in Europe forever and a day, and that's a filamentous fungus. So, it think of mushrooms, right? They're very quick to grow. They have a lot of, when you think of mushrooms, they have a lot of meaty and, umami flavors to them already. But then there's a lot of plant products, plant-based alternative protein, meat-like products that are out there. And the textures is pretty darn phenomenal on some of these things. But a lot of the plant products still don't taste like meat. So if you can combine that with some of these cultivated meat cells, whether they're fat or muscle type cells, to really add that flavor of meat, when you grill it, when you cook it, you don't need a lot to create that flavor and that aroma, because most of what we taste in meat in particular is from odor. So you don't need a lot. Our olfactory senses are incredibly sensitive. So if you can make a hybrid product with 10% of cultivated meat fat, for example, into a plant-based burger or plant-based product, then you can create a superior product with needing very, very little of this added ingredient, which at this point is still very, very expensive. Yeah. So just a much superior product. Yeah, because there's certain things in the plant-based products that are still really, really hard to hide, even though there are big companies with flavorings and additives and ways to mask certain things. But I still, in plant-based products, I still taste a little bit of that metallic taste in a lot of the proteins that would be greatly enhanced by having a cell-based fat added to them, for example.
Interesting. So now when you're kind of creating these hybrid products, and I have also heard about dairy, that is also something that people are working with in this space. And there I'm also wondering, and I think this has a little bit to do with also like more ethical question, like if you take like more like cells from an animal going through to make meat, but do you just take cells from milk to make milk if you would do that? Or like what kind of cells do you extract from an animal to do dairy?
Well, what we're doing with dairy is very different from the cell base that you're talking about. And okay. I mean, we're doing both, but lactation biology is much more complex than cultivated meat, cell-based meat technology. Cell-based meat, you're trying to grow vast amounts of animal cells. you know, they might be a combination of fat cells, they might be a combination of muscle cells, but you're simply trying to grow vast mass amounts of cells, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lactation biology, you're looking at, if you're looking at the way milk is actually produced in a mammalian gland, mammalian milk gland, you're looking at multiple layers of cells that have polarity, an upside and a downside, right? You know, a top and a bottom. And then multiple layers of cells that speak to each other in a curvature where they receive nutrients from one end and excrete out milk from the other end and then harvest that milk. So you see how much more complicated that is than simply growing mass amounts of cells and harvesting those, putting them together and making a food product. Mm-hmm. So lactation biology is much more complex and we are working on that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But for a more immediate term, and what a lot of the milk companies are doing, most of the milk companies are producing casein and whey. Casein and whey are the primary proteins in milk. So, mm-hmm. you know, whey is the protein that you put in your protein powder, and casein is the protein that gives the stretch to cheese and things of that nature. But milk is a very, very complex product per se. It has hundreds, if not thousands, of different molecules in it. So it's a mix of a lot of different things. The primary proteins do happen to be casein and whey, and they're being produced using precision fermentation, which is using a microbial organism, just like pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. that have been programmed to produce this protein. So there's no animal involved. The trick with it is that, and I have to be careful, but the trick with it is the big advantage is you're taking the animal out of it. So you're not producing methane. You're not taking arable land that could be used to grow plant products. You're not, you know, having to keep an animal and put on antibiotics and all of these different things. You're not having to raise that animal. But whether it's less expensive to produce that protein, you know, it's a commodity product, and casein and whey is about 80 cents per kilogram to produce it the traditional way. It's a very cheap, abundant protein in milk. Turtle tree is a little bit different. We're not focusing on casein and whey as our first products. We're focusing on a high value bioactive dairy protein that's found in both human milk and bovine milk, so cow milk,
mm-hmm.
very, very low quantities. So, and our first product is bovine lactoferrin. So there's only two high-value bioactive dairy proteins that have been approved to go into infant formula, for example. You know, the thing that we're the most careful about, you know, because these are our babies, right? And so there's only two proteins, and lactoferrin, bovine lactoferrin, is one of them. And it is found in very, very tiny quantities in milk. And typically it's found more in colostrum. So, you know, as somebody who breastfed for a really long time, colostrum is that early milk for babies that imparts the most immunity to babies. So that's mm-hmm. where, you know, when you have your child, your first milk that comes in is colostrum. And I mean, lactoferrin is found in, you know, all milk. It's found in our saliva. It's found in our tears. But the highest quantity tends to be in that early milk that imparts the most immunity benefits to the newborn baby or the newborn cow, right? And so, but in typical milk, it is 0.1% of typical milk. So you have to go through a massive amount of milk to get out this little bit of lactoferrin. And if you pull it out, the whey protein that you might also pull out, if you separate the two, the whey protein doesn't have a lot of value. They want that lactoferrin in that whey protein.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to use a huge amount of milk and a huge amount of expensive equipment to pull it out of regular dairy. It's not consistently it's not a consistent product. So it can range anywhere from $700 to $3,000 per kilogram versus 80 cents.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a very high value protein, and 90% of all the lactoferrin produced in the world is only used in infant formula, premium infant formula, but only 5% of infant formula uses lactoferrin. because there just isn't enough of it and because it's so expensive. So only the really premium infant formula gets some of these natural high value, you know, high immunity boosting, you know, support. So it supports the, you know, the gut health, the microbiome, immunity support, iron regulation, sleep, all these things that research studies have been done on. Only the premium infant formula gets all of that. So mm-hmm. you are breastfeeding or you are, you know, utilizing these really, really premium infant formulas. Mm-hmm. So our hope is to produce, well, our plan and what we're doing now is to produce this very, very high valued dairy protein to make it so that it's available for not just the premium infant formula, but for all infant formula.
Wow. Yeah, that's a super great mission. Well, with everything that you've been talking about, like the complexity of creating this. So for Turtle Tree, like what does this like roadmap look like to kind of produce this and to get it out in products? Are you doing it today or this is something that's like a few years in the future?
We are working on scaling right now. So we have, you know, we have the bovine lactoferrin and we can produce it, but what so many cell ag companies are doing right now is getting to the point where we can scale up. And then we still, you know, there's still a very complex regulatory and clinical trial, especially with something like infant formula. So, you know, we're thinking we might actually get into adult performance nutrition first because, you know, the regulations aren't quite as complicated for, you know, adults as it is for babies. Babies will take a lot longer, but the plan is to get into regulatory trials and GRAS certification next year. Hopefully, you know, hopefully, knock on wood, we will be doing our big reveal or pop-up launches, product launches next year. So, but we need to be able to work on that scaling up so that we're ready when we have this great need and the partners that we've been talking to are saying, okay, we're ready to order, that we are able to fulfill those orders.
Okay. Well, that sounds amazing. Very, very interesting, this whole topic. So if we just look at the space in general, like who impresses you at the moment in the cell-based space? Is there any organization or brand or like people?
Oh, goodness. I was, you know, when I was looking at that question, I was thinking to myself, well, I really shouldn't be talking about our competition. So I'll swing over to a plant-based company that I have been fascinated with lately. So, you know, this is just a little bit of my observation over the years of looking at all the cell ag companies that have started. You know, that and a lot of these companies wax poetic about in 2015 when everything was still, you know, in the mind's eye, right? It's still in that process of exploration and potential. But now as everybody is getting closer and closer to product, we've become more closed mouth and protected and, you know, about IP. And that's why, you know, I could go on forever about the importance of academic research since that was the world that I came from.
Yeah.
So I have lots of opinions about lots of different companies in the cultivated meat and cultivated ag world. But if you don't mind, I will keep that to myself. I will say that one of the plant-based companies that I've been fascinated with recently has been Black Sheep. Mm-hmm. So they've been working on a plant-based lamb product as their rollout, and I love their business motif. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that, so you're looking at a hardcore UC Davis alum, and they have hired a lot of food scientists from UC Davis. So I really respect that. They know very clearly that they are a food company and that what it comes down to is making a delicious product. I mean, so many of us are going for environmental and cruelty-free, but in the end, if you're really trying to get people to come over, your product has to taste good, be available, and be affordable.
Yeah. I hear that. And all the plant-based brands listening, it have to be delicious.
Yes. Yes. Be delicious. You will go far if you are tasty.
Yeah, oh, that's for sure. So where can people find you and Turtle Tree online, websites and Twitter, if they're interested to hear more about your work?
Right. Well, we're on all the standards. So Turtle Tree, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. Me personally, I live and breathe on LinkedIn. So if anybody ever wants to reach out, I love talking to people, always looking for ways to collaborate and learn more. So Kara Leong on LinkedIn. I'm happy to talk to anybody who might have interest.
All right. That sounds good. Well, Kara, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Ricard. This has been fun.
That was our episode for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. The Green Hero Podcast was produced by Andrew Rojek, and I'm your host, Ricard Bjerkdal. I'll see you next week for another conversation from our colorful plant-based world. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast or share this episode with a friend. If you haven't already, you can also find Green Hero in the App Store. Download our app and start enjoying a plant-based lifestyle today. You can also find us on the web at the URL greenhero.life and on Twitter and Instagram, where we operate under the handle Green Hero Life. All right, see you next week. Bye-bye.